anybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win? I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love, I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne, a lyrical analysis of Kanye West. I'm just going to bask one more time in that I get to say that all by myself. Okay. My name is Travis Bean, and today I have a very, very special guest with me. This is your first time as a guest, correct?
Yeah. I think it's my first time as a guest.
Long-time listener, first-time caller kind of thing?
Actually, no-time listener.
That's true. You've never listened to the show, which is why... That's why the quality is so good, because Chris is always not listening to it and always not giving me feedback on what we should fix. So that's why, you know, it's top notch. But today we have a very special discussion to have with this longtime listener, or not, no time listener, first time caller. He's got some stuff to get off his chest. We've been talking about Jesus King of all these other people, and it seems fitting that we're finally going to be talking about Jesus King with our very special guest, Chris Lambert. How are you doing today, Chris?
Oh my God, Travis. Oh my God. So excited to be here.
You know, being in the same room with me is crazy. Yeah, I know. I get it all the time.
Yeah, big fan of yours. It's nice to be chatting, you know?
It's like Kanye, then me, then Clay.
Oh yeah. Clay Z is up there.
Someday you'll meet him.
Someday. Just not those text messages.
Yeah, and not just nudie pics that he sends you. Like, you guys are going to meet face to face.
Can't wait. It's going to be brilliant. And I'll be like, you, sir, look like Jay-Z. Yeah, just rib him a little bit.
But clay ear.
Clay ear.
So, Jesus is King came out roughly 10 days ago, and... I listened to it. I released my solo episode, which is very strange for me. I'm sure, Chris, I don't know, do you have any experience just talking to nobody for hours on end?
Yeah.
Okay, being so an only child. Maybe this isn't that weird to you. I'd get in front of the mic and just talk about how I felt about something, which was surprisingly easier than I thought it was, but at the very end did make me feel like an insane person. And then after that, it was really fun to talk with a bunch of different fans, Kanye fans, about their reactions to Jesus is King. They all had like different angles they were taking on it. It was really fun. And we were saving you for last because I don't know what angle you're going to bring to it. I don't know if you'll have anything to add to the show, but like, you're the wild card. And I feel like we're going to get something unique from you.
Yeah. You know, I tried dating a girl in college one time and she's like, you know who you remind me of? I was like, who? She's like, the Charlie guy from Always Sunny.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I was like, you mean the guy that's like a homeless stalker that's always dirty and doesn't shower? And she's like, yeah, but he's funny. I was like, well, okay.
Just the funny part. Okay, yeah, you take that for sure.
Take it.
And I would also love to get Charlie Day in here, but for now, we got Chris. Like, that'll do. I'm sure his perspective is also valuable, and we're just going to get into it. We're going to jaw about Jesus is King. Whatever road we go down, you know, that's the beauty of this show. There are no rules.
Yeah. That's the thing that makes it beautiful.
The only rules we have are, we have to talk about Kanye. That's rule number one. Two, we have to delay talking about Kanye for at least 5 minutes. And three, Patrick Swayze has to come into the equation somehow.
We break rule three all the time, but you keep trying to enforce it.
Yeah, Chris keeps cutting it out of the show. I do force the conversation every time, but you guys just don't get to hear it. Although we are going to be releasing a special bonus episode that's going to compile all of our Patrick Swayze discussions once we finally, you know, close up shop.
Can't wait. That's what I keep promising Travis. Just keep promising Travis.
Okay. So, Jesus is Keen. This will be good because I've had 10 days to think about the album, and I've been bouncing off the people that are on the show, but I haven't been going too deep into like what my listening experience has been over time. So we're going to start from the very beginning. We're going all the way back to Friday, October 25th, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 25th. Where are you? What's going on? What's happening with you?
So I was on a boat. I was going fast and Pashmina Afghan. Is mm-hmm. that still like a reference people know?
I know it.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know it.
You don't know I'm on a boat?
Oh, I know I'm on a boat, but I guess I don't know the lyrics that well.
Well, that's something that you need to change vociferously. I don't know what that word means, but it sounded right to
you. It sounds right, yeah.
So I was on my honeymoon, and we were doing like a cruise, which I'd never done before, but it seemed like a easier way than trying to take trains all over the place in Italy.
I'm gonna stop you right there. What kind of cruise are we talking here? How big is this boat? How many people are on it?
I think it was like 700 people. It was small.
700? Oh, that's small.
Yeah, most of them have like 1,000, 2,000 people. Mm. So this was smaller, and we were like the youngest people on the boat. Everybody else was like 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
I have more questions, by the way, so don't move on from the boat yet.
Yeah, so it was interesting because it was a lot of like, oh, we have a show tonight for everybody. It's a ventriloquist.
What if you showed up to the ventriloquist show and it was Kanye with a puppet or dummy or whatever they call him?
I feel like dummy's offensive. Puppet, a string people.
Oh man, we're gonna get a lot of 1-star reviews from dummies. Puppets, sorry.
Yeah. String people. I don't know. I'd probably go to both shows, the 6:30 and the 8:30.
You would just sit quietly in the crowd and not say anything?
Yeah. I would then give a standing ovation, shout for an encore, and then flash. I would flash.
Oh, what does that mean?
You know how at like concerts, people like girls would like flash like the rock stars
with like the cameras and their phones.
Yeah, Travis, with their cameras and their phones.
Okay, so they would take a picture. That's how I say it.
Yeah, some flash photography. I would
okay
flash photography Kanye.
All right, so you would flash Kanye with your cylindrical thing that you use to communicate with people.
Oh my God! Yeah. That's what would happen.
Where were we going with this? Okay, you're on a boat. What's going on there?
So this was a at sea day. We had just been to
Genoa. You mean at sea, not sea day. So an at sea day.
Yes, like a day where
you weren't at something called sea day.
No, we were at sea day. It was a day at sea. Okay. You need to brush up on your cruise terminology, Travis. Look,
I hate to keep interrupting, but I want to make sure everything's crystal clear for our audience because they don't know you. You're a first-time guest. Like, I don't want anyone to be tripped up.
Yeah, so we're in like Genoa, Italy, and then they take us down to Salerno, and we did like a big excursion where we went to the Amalfi Coast. Drove 2 hours to the Amalfi Coast and then went to Pompeii.
Okay, that's pretty big.
Yeah, so you know, you leave at 8 a.m., you get back at 6 p.m., and that was the 24th. So the 25th, we just had nothing. It's just like all day you're on the boat, wandering around in the middle of the water. Mm. And, you know, the album was supposed to come out. So I just was sitting there for most of the night, like in bed, while my wife was asleep, like waiting for the album to come out.
Okay, and so it's nighttime where you are.
Yeah. I checked. We were 6 hours ahead. So I got up at 5 a.m. Because we were 6 hours ahead of Central Time. Mm-hmm. So I got up at 5 a.m.
Big mistake.
Because that was going to be midnight. So, and I had to buy like an internet package. So I was just like, all right, I'm ready to like tweet and be part of this. We have nothing to do all day. And then it's just like hanging out. Nothing. Lots of more nothing. finally, Consequence tweeted that it was going to be noon, that he had submitted the album. And I was just like, all right, fuck yeah. That gives me some hours. So noon, my time was 6 p.m. Or 5 p.m. And we had dinner. Like our dinner time on the cruise was 5:15. So
that's well, those old people, they got to eat earlier so they can get to bed.
Absolutely. That was a, yo, most of them like were going. Like I went to the gym the one day and it was just filled with people on like the treadmills and like the ellipticals, just like pumping and sweating. They were going to like dance parties. They were doing long hikes. Like,
oh man,
they were active. But
they made you look old.
They did. So we're sitting at dinner with like a couple from Australia, a couple from New Zealand, and the album comes out. Like I get the text that the album's out, and I can't just rush away.
Yeah, you can.
You know, trying to play cool and be like, "Oh, honeymoon is primary." Like, see, honey, you over Kanye. things you have to do on your honeymoon.
Sure. Okay,
we can. But I was trying to download the album. I had Deezer open and my internet was going so slow. So like the 45 minutes that we were at dinner, it downloaded every hour. And that was all that it got.
Oh man, that's a bummer.
So I'm just like, I was able to get Twitter to work, but I could barely get web pages to load. I couldn't get any videos. I couldn't get any music to play. Like, it was really frustrating. So we got back to the room after dinner and I was just like, oh no, I'm going to have to wait. And Marie holds up her phone and she was able to download it all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So AT&T, when you're on a cruise, is much better than T-Mobile.
Oh, that's what I got.
You have AT&T?
I do. I married into it.
Yeah, so if you're ever in Europe, you win. So I was able to listen to the album once through and then had to go back to like making honeymoon primary.
That was only 26 minutes too, so you weren't gone that long.
No, not long at all. So we were watching Schitt's Creek, so I just let Marie watch an episode by herself, and then I came back to it, but it was like 3 hours later, she was finally just like, all right, I'm going to bed. And by that time, it had finally finished downloading on my phone. It just took a few hours. And that's when I really just got to sit down and listen to it repeatedly. So I think I started at 9 and I went to bed that night around 1 and was just listening to it the whole time.
So you're up for like a solid 20 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a long time.
Oof. Okay. And okay, so I'm a terrible interviewer. Let's back up for a second. You're listening to Jesus Is King. Your wife's watching Schitt's Creek. Okay, the creek that belongs to Schitt's. And so okay, so you're sitting there. It's just one listen. Like, what is your immediate reaction?
I dug the production right away, and I'm always scared on the first listen of every new Kanye album that I'm going to hate it. That's always my fear. It never happens, but I really liked it. Was darker than what I thought it was going to be in terms of the production, especially after hearing some of the Yandi leaks. I thought everything was going to sound more like Everything We Need in Water, where it didn't really. Like I didn't listen to really any of the Jesus Is King leaks before. So I hadn't heard Sela when it was Chakras or anything like that. Or no, Use This Gospel as Chakras, wasn't it? I hadn't listened to Sela. I hadn't listened to Closed on Sundays. I hadn't listened to Chakras, at all. So I didn't really know what to expect. and the fact that Sela and Follow God and Use This Gospel and Hands-On were as kind of bleak production-wise or stronger production-wise than what they than say Water and Everything We Need was surprising to me, but also much more the style of production that I like and enjoy. So I was way more happy with that.
Yeah. So like on that first listen, so I talked about it on my episode that I feel like my first listen was kind of tainted, and I was very, I didn't know how I felt about it because I had like my scholar hat on and I was like, all right, let's understand this shit. And I went in thinking like with the mindset I have about Kanye albums without remembering that like it's the first listen and like I'm not going to get everything and I should have just enjoyed it. Was that, what was your listening experience like? Were you just there to enjoy it and like experience the music, or were you trying to pick apart details like right away?
A little of both. I think usually when I listen to something for the first time or watch something for the first time, I'm pretty casual about it, looking for the moments that kind of pop out to me and going from there. So I wasn't necessarily trying to analyze every single lyric or listen as closely to every single lyric, but just kind of catching what came up and giving like close attention to everything. But it wasn't like a stranglehold on, all right, what was that? What was that? What was that? Okay, I need to go back. Okay, he said that. He said that. How's that connect to this? It was more just kind of catching like, all right, so he is like fired up. Oh, he's yelling at his dad. Okay, not very Christ-like. He's also kind of angry on this song. Okay. On God. Like, oh, yeah, that's beautiful. Oh, wait, what about 350s and taxes? Like, what the fuck is that? That was the one line, hearing like the 350 and tax line, that when I first heard it, I was just like, that might be the dumbest Kanye lyric I've ever heard. Just it felt absurd in a way. So I was glad when I eventually circled back around, it was just like, oh, okay, he's making a big deal about this as it transitions into Everything We Need. And there's this contrast between the two. I didn't really get that at the time, but I was just kind of like, what?
Isn't that funny that like we hear Kanye lyrics like that for the first time and like that's the reaction? I mean, thinking back to like Taylor Swift, like, what were we like, what was the point of freaking out about that? Because like we know Kanye intends that, like there's meaning behind that line, there's meaning to the narrative. Like Kanye sings about like cheating on Kim and we know he doesn't, like there's a point to all of that.
That's kind of the weird thing, right? Like we are, I think of anybody, two of the people that you would think would be the least susceptible to thinking Kanye's being shallow in with a lyric. But yet, even on first listen, I don't know if it was the same for you, there's still that immediate like, oh, what?
Oh, totally.
And if you never look deeper to it, I get why people would be like, oh, the lyrics aren't as good. But then you start to realize what it's doing. And it's like, well, the lyric might not be poetic. It might be crude. But is it that also part of the charm of it? Like that crudeness is part of the character and the tone that he's trying to convey at this point. He's not trying to be poetic and deep because he wants to show the ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the big thing I've gathered from talking to everybody about the album is like, we all have different relationships with Kanye, and some of us like really idolize him and put a lot of stake in him. So if he does something that disappoints us, like it affects us. And sometimes, you know, we have the scholarly hat on, the academic critic hat, you know, and we can look at the lines from a more objective standpoint and see that like, okay, it like means something different. I've just found that like when your life is Kanye, you know, when you're as big as a fan as everybody in the show who's come on is, you can tend to be like more critical and like care more and like be more judgmental and have less sense about a line like that. Like, that's just what he kind of does to you when you're in that deep.
And I can see that because it was a different experience this time. On the flight back, I ended up listening to Kanye's whole discography, start to finish, because you know, we left Venice at 7:30 in the morning and had one flight from Venice to Frankfurt at like 11 to 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then another flight from Frankfurt to Houston that took off at like 2 p.m.
Hell.
But it didn't land until 7 p.m. Texas time. So it was something like a 10 or 11 hour flight. And then had another flight from Houston back to Austin that ended up, because of storms, having to circle around and go further north. Yeah. And Gary Clark Jr. was on the plane.
Wait, really?
But, yeah. Wow. He walked onto the plane and I saw just this tall guy wearing, like, carrying a broad brimmed hat. And I then noticed all the rings on his finger and put together like, oh yeah, that's Gary Clark. And he was standing right by me and I just went like, oh, nice. Hey.
And he said, like, this to him?
I said it to him. And he kind of like gave like a small, awkward, like, smile, nod, and then walked on.
That's like, what that. I would do.
Yeah. But listening to the discography in that like 24-hour period or 12-hour period or 80-hour period, it felt like, it was, especially with the amount of conversation we have with people on Twitter and just how much you and I have been trying to understand more, not just, as you said, our scholarly academic perspective on the lyrics and what he's been doing, but more so the relationship that people have with Kanye. And it really was startling listening to College Dropout and Late Registration and thinking about Kanye as the voice of like people in Chicago, the voice of like this Black experience that he had had, and what some people must really feel in that comparison from like, this guy spoke for me, to now lacking that connection to what he speaks about and speaks for. And it hit differently on that time of just attempting to have that kind of appreciation for what Kanye means to some people and why an album like this or some of the previous ones just might not be what they wanted it to be, and why that disconnect might exist. Even if for us, it's just gotten stronger because it appeals to like our sense of artistry and our sense of narrative construction. And we like just watching his journey and what he's going on from more of a detached perspective, or associating more with the ambitious aspects or the ambition or the drive to succeed and the journey that he's gone on in that way, far less than him as a voice for us and our experience.
Yeah. And I guess we can get into this now, because this is something we've done with all the other guests. Although all the other guests had been on the show before, this is your first time, so this is a fresh perspective with you. you know, you're talking about this relationship people have with Kanye. Like, obviously, we have like hundreds of episodes that you can go back and like, everyone knows how you feel about Kanye. But like, compared to like how most people do feel about Kanye and how they feel like he isn't their voice anymore, like the last couple of years of Kanye and everything he's gone through, like, what is he to you, and how does that affect your listening experience of Jesus Is King once you go back through all those albums and come back to it? Like, what perspective are you coming in on that listen again with?
It's interesting because, you know, I'm at a point now where I'm 32 years old and I'm still like on the grind for the success and the achievement and the breakthrough that I want, right? My main goal is literature, poetry. Like, I want the Pulitzer, I want the Nobel. Like, I want to be known as and remembered as one of the best novelists, and not just of my time. But the path to get there is difficult, especially just the amount of time it takes to write a novel, the ability to write a novel and the time that it takes to like gain that ability just to do that and then to further it and do it well. Kanye, with what he's done in terms of changing up the styles on every album, has always appealed to me because that's always been the aesthetic that I've had in my art style, but also just flexibility is something that I've always appreciated in life. And that multitudinal ability to do this thing and this thing and this thing and just kind of, I guess, sample mm-hmm. and the way that he samples on a song, but the way he tends to sample in life as a whole. He's always been aspirational to me. Just he came from a place where he wasn't supposed to achieve what he achieved, and he's been able to do it in original ways and continue to do it at this high level, and that's exactly what I want to do. But seeing him on Jesus is King almost circling back around, and especially seeing it on his discography as he's looked to settle down more. And right. we started seeing that on Yeezus. We saw it very like clear on The Life of Pablo, and then again on Ye, and now on Jesus is King, where it feels like Kanye's life was an outward funnel and like an opening. And now he's starting to, in some ways, close the borders a bit or narrow down what it is that's most important to him, like family and faith. And he has Yeezys, he has his music, like these are the things that he's going to do and pursue. It's strange to see somebody that felt like this fountain of like indomitable and like nonstop energy and power and achievement really starting to refine mm-hmm. and not just slow down might not be the right word, but find a sense of peace that wasn't present. And then saying like, okay, if there was a tension to Kanye and now there's this palpable sense of peace and I feel that kind of connection to Kanye's aspirational efforts, does that mean that there's been this tension that I've been experiencing too? And what does that mean for me in finding a sense of peace? Mm-hmm. And do I have to achieve before I can find that sense of peace? Or if I find that sense of peace first, does that mean I'll never achieve?
Yeah, I think it must be the age, because I'm going to be turning 32 this week and I can relate to like pretty much everything you're saying. Not that like we're directly in line of Kanye. Kanye's like what, 44, 43 now? What is he? Like he's on a different journey, but like at the same time, he's had such a ramped up lifestyle in a way that like we can't relate to. Like maybe we are in this similar place where you start to take stock of everything. And, you know, Kanye got married not too long ago, just like we did. And I feel like that's been a big part of it for me, is like kind of winding down our youthful years, like in the cities and everything. Like we're thinking about moving to suburbs, starting a family, like, you really do start to look at yourself and take stock of all the decisions you make and like consider everything. Like now I'm at this point where like, I don't really want to drink as much anymore. And like, and I'm constantly self-conscious about the, like what I'm putting in my body and like how healthy I'm being, like all these little things keep adding up and it does become very reflective and you start to feel like mature in a way that has never happened before. Like maybe you've always been mature, you know, like you're a good upstanding human being and like you're empathetic and progressive, but like the maturity I feel now is like more of a natural feeling, like I'm on, life put me on a path to how I'm seeing myself and how I'm seeing the world right now. And that I'm with you there. I see that on this album. Like Kanye's in a different state, you know. The Life of Pablo is a mature album because he learns that family's important. Like, okay, great, like that's part of the story. But to me, like the story on Jesus is keen. Like he kind of is existing in this maturity. And yes, he has like some issues on the album that he has to overcome. Like he has a bit of an ego, but by the end of the album, by the time Jesus is Lord is happening, it feels like a different Kanye to me. He feels like you said, very much at peace.
Yeah, there's that sense that you get with that idea of the tension and then the calmness, and that tension's so present, and Sela follow God, closed on Sunday and on God, and there's such a release that happens on everything we need and water and God is, and even hands-on, instead of turning combative in the way that closed on Sunday is, has this like pray for me, like mm-hmm. like criticize me, sure, but like do you not have any love, do you not have prayer in your heart, like I want to be part of this. Moving into use this gospel and then Jesus is Lord, there's such catharsis that mm-hmm. happens, and I don't know if I've ever really felt that with a Kanye album. I feel like it was part of the intention of Ye, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But Ye is more about like, all right, I'm trying to be better, not necessarily finding peace. And Kitsy Ghost is about realizing that, you know, you can live with your demons and it's going to be okay, but that doesn't necessarily necessitate peace either, right? It just mm-hmm. necessitates hope. Yeah. So it was, it's been interesting thinking about just that aspect of it. Like, what's it mean if Kanye is like finding peace, and given like the connection that each individual has with Kanye, like, can you appreciate that peace? What does that peace mean to you? Is this an album that for some people they're going to come back to, maybe they're 22 now, they come back to when they're 30, and for some reason then it clicks for them. Maybe there's somebody
right.
that just loves the production right now or loves some of the lyrics right now, but there's going to be deeper intent. Like, I feel like it's like that with a lot of albums just in general. Like, a lot of people could love 808s and Heartbreak and then lose a parent, and then suddenly it's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean, the feeling you had at the end where like it felt different, like it was a different kind of catharsis. Because like, say, take My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, like the catharsis that is at the end of Lost in the World, like catharsis is really just any sort of like finite feeling, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be good. It's whatever like next step you take at the end of a journey, like whatever becomes fulfilling at the end. And I guess that's always been easy to pinpoint at the end of a Kanye album because they're such stories. Like, in a lot of ways, it doesn't even sometimes sound like you're like, the character is Kanye. The character is, you know, it's this exaggerated version of Kanye. The character is Jesus. It's like this other entity that's just like, it does reflect Kanye, but like is also its own character. Even on Ye, like I feel that a little bit, where Violent Crimes is like classic Kanye. Like, it isn't like a happy song to end on. It's more of just like a foreboding song or something. Like, all right, this is the next step. To where it's like, Jesus King to me feels like I'm reading somebody's journal. Like, it doesn't, there is a story there and I'm excited to talk about it, but it's a very different kind of story. It really does feel like Kanye is the main character, and he's just stating about his life, and understanding the narrative on the album becomes a better understanding of Kanye. And I just don't think we've had that before in this way. Like, of course I understand Kanye more after I listen to Ye, but there's something different when it's like this personal, you know?
Well, that's one of the, I think that's something that's going to come up throughout the season as we're doing the Jesus is King season, is we talk so much about Kanye's discography as a story in and of itself, mm-hmm. given that his albums tend to detail the period of time between albums, right? So mm-hmm. College Dropout told kind of his whole story up until releasing College Dropout.
Yeah.
And then Late Registration is that time after College Dropout came out and him reflecting on, all right, now that I'm famous, what's this like? And then Graduation is, now that I'm super fucking famous, what's this like? And then each one just takes place in the time period after that. And you see this onset of the extra ego, the celebrity character or the celebrity persona that gets built up over time and really comes to the forefront on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And I'm not saying that Kanye planned all of this out or maybe was even intentionally thinking about it, but it's just fascinating. You go from College Dropout and Late Registration that were so personal and autobiographical in a lot of the songs, not all of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them are still fictionalized, right? Like Family Business, as personal as that seems, it wasn't Kanye's story. It was just right. Capturing this idea and the feeling that he wanted at that time. Compared to, say, like Crack, or not Crack Music, Drive Slow, which mm-hmm. really is autobiographical of what he experienced and dealt with. But you see that autobiography start to fall away as he gets more and more famous, into Graduation, into 808s and Heartbreak, which is still very personal in the emotion it conveys, but a lot of the songs aren't necessarily in line with what he's talking about mm-hmm. on, say, Hey Mama or All Falls Down or Last Call. And then My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, when you get the onset of the fantasy, what follows? Yeezus, Pablo, these two like yeah. fantasy versions of Kanye, the characters. And then Ye is supposed to be this return to Kanye himself, with the final song saying reality is upon us. And now you finally have Jesus is King, that feels way more autobiographical again mm-hmm. than those recent albums.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, we kept at the end of every time we finish an album on the show, we're like, what's next for Kanye? Like, what could he do? Like, you never consider that, just like, oh, he's going to make a much more like humbled personal album. Like, he's really just going to like talk directly to us. And once again, like, I'm not ready for it. Like, I think that explains why like Jesus is King was such a slow burn for me. I say slow burn. I loved it like the day of, by the fifth listen. But like, you know, he just like, that's what I love about Kanye. He always keeps you on your toes. Like, he's never content with just putting out the same kind of material.
So I caught like a little bit of heat because, you know, the tweet, right?
Oh yeah.
I tweeted out and I had some stupid opening. I've learned that I should almost always delete like the first like clause or like throat clearing, but it was like, all right, I'm just going to say it. Like, Jesus is King is a 10 out of 10. Like, it may not be the album that you want, but it's doing enough like fascinating things, has the concept, and like continues to put Kanye in the forefront of artistic minimalism and nuance in hip hop. And I still feel that way, mm-hmm. but it did hit me like that first night. I feel like I really liked the album by the time I went to bed. And then the next day when I was listening to it again, on some of the like bus rides between the excursions, mm-hmm. I was just like, yeah, you know what? This album is doing enough. I'd started to put together some of the connectivity between things, and understanding some more of how the songs resonated with one another, that I felt good about that. So I still think 10 out of 10, all out Kanye albums are 10 out of 10s to me though.
Yeah, I got dragged into the heat you were experiencing, by the way. A little bit. There were a couple tweets I got, and one in particular I know was a big fan of the show, and I don't mean anything against him, but he basically came at me and said, like, because I think I had a tweet that said, Jesus King reminded me a lot of Yeezus, and not just in like the tone of the album, because I actually do think they're pretty similar in subtler ways, but to me, there was something about Jesus King that struck me because it wasn't an easy listen for me. Like, it wasn't like something I instantly got, which I think was true for like the life of Pablo and Ye, and not to take anything away from those albums, I think they're very complex and take a lot of time to understand, but there was something so familiar, like, about, like, the sound and, like, the tone and the kind of, not, I don't want to say obvious story, but, like, I could tell there was a story, to where it's like, I didn't see that of Jesus as King, and the tone really threw me off because it's a gospel album and it sounds angry. Like, there was so much about it I didn't understand that wasn't easy for me. And that's why the initial reaction is to kind of repel, which I think probably happened with a lot of people. The difference is with you and me is we're going to listen to this album over and over and over. If I ever have that reaction with another album, I'm just going to be like, okay, like, not for me, I'm done. But, you know, because of the show, because I love Kanye and I want to understand him, I feel like the journey with this album was similar to Yeezus. So that's basically what I said in the tweet. And someone just came at me like, this is crazy. Like, everyone's excusing Kanye for this. Like, you say this. Chris says Yachty's a 10 out of 10. Like, you guys, or Jesus is King is a 10 out of 10. Like, you guys are crazy. And it again, just very much revealed to me that, like, Kanye West has, like, such rabid fans that, like, the reactions are extreme. And it's not even just your own reaction. Like, you then become, like, indignant about other people's reactions. It's like the community he's built can be both frustrating and it's kind of beautiful that he drives people to those lengths.
Yeah, like the responses are usually, like, all over the place. And it's funny because I feel like I see it again and again and again. Like, there wasn't such a concentrated place for Kanye fans, I don't think, prior to the Life of Pablo. Like, I mean, Kanye to the, of course, like, no offense, mm-hmm. Kanye to the, but it's just y'all are hard to be part of casually and even get a membership to. So I think for just, like, a lot of Kanye fans, there wasn't really accessible communities. And I still remember, though, when Yeezus came out, that there was I saw a lot of chatter about it that was just negative. And even,
oh yeah,
you know, 2.5 years later, when we started being really active on R. Kanye, like, there was so much Yeezus hate each time. Not each time, but
totally.
I saw it often whenever Yeezus got brought up or whenever people were talking about albums, Yeezus was just consistently at the bottom. But it started to change the more time went on. And I felt kind of the same thing happened with The Life of Pablo. Like, it was still a lot of people taking shots at, oh, you know, there's nothing to these lyrics. The beats are awesome. The production is great. Some of the songs are catchy. Like, I like it. But this is definitely Kanye's, like, least thoughtful album. Or this is the one where he just, like, kind of threw in the towel a lot of the time, which is still wild to me to think that those perspectives persist, but they diminished over time. And similar thing happened with Ye, not so much with Kids See Ghost, just because people love the production on that so much and the novelty of Kanye and Cudi, but it seems to be the same thing with Jesus is King. And it's funny to me to see the cycle repeat over and over again. And I feel like just this one, as with the others, opinion is going to improve as people listen to it, as they're given more time with it, as they get used to what it's doing. And yeah, we'll see a lot of those just initial differences and clashes of opinion in the fan base maybe homogenize a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I actually was going to take a screenshot of this and post it to Facebook, or Twitter. I guess we could post it to Facebook too, who knows. But I use this website called Rate Your Music. And I mean, if you want any proof that Yeezus was hated at the time it came out, they actually have, for each album, they have a little chart that shows how the rating has changed over time. So when Yeezus came out, it was at a, let's look here. Right now, it's at a 3.62 out of 5, which maybe doesn't sound that high, but it's actually kind of high for Rate Your Music, where people are a little more harsh or just strict about the way they rate things. So that means when it came out, it was like at a 3.2 something, according to this chart. And now it's at a 3.62, which is the number one album for 2013 on the site. And the, let's see, on the hip hop chart, it's number 23 all time. On the all time albums list, it's number 239. Like, this is an album that was hated on the site when it came out. I don't even think it would have been in the top 100 for the year. And now look at it, like, it's just going to keep happening with Kanye albums. And like, you can get mad in the moment and you can want to like convince somebody that it, but like, I think as you and I are pretty much finding out, like, the reaction we've had to this album, both based on like where we are in our lives and our personal journeys with Kanye, like, I mean, that's just how it is. That's the beauty of art. That's how you react to art, the way you connect with art. Sometimes it just takes time to sit there and like make sense to you.
And I think there's some people that still might not be able to get over the religious aspects of it. Because like myself, I'm very agnostic. And, you know, I grew up, I had a bar mitzvah, but I was never very much, like, I went because my parents made me go. Even when I was a kid, I felt very agnostic about everything. But I feel like there's going to be a time where people understand or resonate with the album, maybe not because they have a religious breakthrough, but just that idea of going from a place of tension to a place of peace. Mm-hmm. And whatever that means to you, whether that's through Christianity, whether that's through another religion, whether that's just through maturation or success or growth, I think that that's the role this album will play for people, similar into the way that 808s and Heartbreak plays a kind of emotional indulgence for a lot of people that are feeling that kind of blue downtroddenness. And that's pretty interesting to me, because I feel like a lot of, not every Kanye album does that. Like, they're all their unique sonic experiences.
Right.
But I don't know if all of them are perfect for like a certain mood. Like, I don't think My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy fits like, oh, I'm in a joyous time in my life, or I'm like feeling motivated. Like, it can be that for some people, but I don't think that that necessarily is the prevailing attitude of it. Even Ye, I don't think necessarily captures that same sense of peace.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be cool for people to, and not everyone will. I don't think everybody will or has to eventually like Jesus is King. I get why it still might not appeal to people, just for the aesthetics, maybe some of the lyrics, they can't get over something. The same way that I can't get over certain things in some movies or books or albums. We all have our things, but it'll be cool for people when they finally have that connection to the sense of peace and just can view the album from that perspective.
Yeah. And I think you touched on something really important, is that, I mean, a big reason a lot of people don't connect with it is because they see it as a gospel album, and they see Kanye saying, you get like very cliche things, which I guess is par for the course when anyone's like rediscovering their faith or they feel reborn again. Like, this is kind of the language a lot of people have. But I guess to me, when I listen to the sound of the album and the change in Kanye's rhetoric over the course of the album, like the flow and the narrative, I don't see anything cliched or ordinary. It's, and to me, like, it is a gospel album, but it's not necessarily, this will sound crazy, but like, it's not about God in the same way, like, none of his albums are about like one thing. You know, God is the vessel through which like Kanye finds peace, finds catharsis, finds a better way to live. And that's really what like every Kanye album is to me, is like somebody on a path to becoming better. So I think if people can start to see what the album for what it truly is, and not just see it as a gospel album with like a bunch of lines about Jesus and God, then maybe it'll come together for some people. Again, like you said, like, maybe it won't, maybe it does, that doesn't matter to some people. Maybe, you know, they just hear what they hear. They hear him talking about Chick-fil-A. They hear him talking about God, and they're like, all right, don't, I don't need that. But I mean, this is Kanye we're talking about. Album after album, he does this. There's something much deeper and more profound to what he's talking about than what's on the surface.
That was another conversation that I had with somebody on Twitter that has been fascinating to me just from the thought of it, or the process of it, or the difference in approaches. They were talking about how they thought a lot of the grand ideas on Jesus as King are brought up but not talked about anymore. They're just kind of there and then forgotten. Where I disagreed with that, because I think that while the album is this gospel album that praises God, because we get that personal journey that Kanye goes on from Sela through Use This Gospel, or Sela to Jesus is Lord, that is so intimate, you get this combination of these grander ideas coming in and getting explored through the journey that Kanye goes on, and the inner contextuality between like what he's talking about and Hands On compared to and contrasting Sela, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe some people can't pray for him because they're still in that combative space. So there's this big idea that's brought in on Hands On that's given more nuance as you juxtapose it with everything else, rather than just saying like, well, he brings it up, but like, that's it. There's no more to it. The example that I gave was Igor being another track that was like smaller and more intimate. And the person had said that they thought Igor was a stronger album because it didn't introduce anything grand in the way that Jesus is King did. And that was actually the reason that I thought Igor paled in comparison to Jesus is King, which that's not to take anything away from Igor. Like, I love Igor. It's still been in rotation for me for most of this year since it came out. It's just the thing that I wanted from it was it to be more than just a small, intimate story, the same way that Flower Boy was. Like, I wanted there to be a larger societal point of view on it. And I think that's the next space that Tyler needs to get to, is that ability to have the macro and the micro. And it's one of the things that Kendrick is so good at. He balances the macro and the micro very well. But I think that'll be an interesting conversation, or an interesting juxtaposition, is just to look at the difference in Igor and the differences Jesus is King, and just the scope that they have. And that's one of the things that I love about this album, is that it can have the microscope that Igor has while still bringing in these macro things that Igor doesn't quite do. And there's some people that will just prefer what Igor does because it's more contained and easier just to, not easier, but it makes for a, I keep using all these reductive words, like simple listening experience, or maybe just like a straightforward listening experience.
Digestible.
Yeah, digestible listening experience, where Jesus is King ends up being a bit more uneven, but it's uneven because it's exploring both things. And to me, that unevenness is what gives it range and highs and lows and depth and all of its like spaces for excellence.
Yeah, and only uneven, like on the surface, like you're saying, like the sound of it, like you expect an album to be one thing and Jesus is King is like 10 things, but it's even because like it is one story. We are watching an arc a person is going through. He starts in a low place and comes out on top, like finds catharsis, finds peace. It's actually very even in that way, and once you see the motions Kanye's trying to go through, it becomes, like, to me, a very smooth, digestible listen.
Yeah, you know, and if I do have one criticism, or not one criticism, but the main criticism that I'm noticing, is that I think at one point early in the podcast, I don't know if the episode even exists anymore, we talked about how Kanye never really repeats the same thing on his albums. And I think that we're starting to see him fall a bit into a routine with his structure. Like, what was it? Yeezus, you start in kind of a negative place and you end in more of a positive place. Mm-hmm. Life of Pablo, you start in more of a negative place and you end in more of a positive place. Ye did the same thing. Could See Ghost did the same thing.
Yeah.
And this does the same thing. Like, start negative, end positive. And that same 313 structure gets repeated in a 515 or 1414 if you want to get more specific. But we're seeing some more of the repeated tricks, which I don't mind as much because each time he's doing something new with it, but are starting to see more of a pattern.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. And it probably speaks to more like what you and I are each looking out of an experience. Like, I remember when, didn't you write about This Is 40 and how Judd Apatow used the same scene twice?
Yes.
He used like, what was it? In 40-Year-Old Virgin, someone's on a bike.
Yeah, the climactic scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin is Steve Carell tries to get back, I can't remember her name, the actress.
Catherine Keener? What the fuck is
Keener,
her name?
Yeah, Catherine Keener. I think that's right. They have been dating, and then she found out he's a virgin, and she freaks out, and he was also doing other weird things, but they break up, and then he tries to win her back, and she runs away from him, and he gets on his bike and starts chasing her while on the bike and eventually crashes, mm-hmm. and she sees him crash and is like, oh, God, and runs up to him and, like, helps. And they're finally, after the crash, able to talk and work things out. And then it's positive from there. And This Is 40. Paul Rudd is in a relationship with, God, I'm going to look so...
Leslie Mann.
Thank you. And call me a misogynist, like, sexist misogynist.
Only remember the male actors, huh?
Yeah. Paul Rudd's married to Leslie Mann, and they're 40, and the relationship hits a rut. And,
and they're 40.
they start going in different paths, and it looks like maybe their marriage is going to end, and eventually she goes driving somewhere, and Paul Rudd gets on a bike and chases after her, and then ends up crashing, and she comes out, and it's in the hospital that they're able to have the catharsis that, like, and it's just the exact same thing. The exact same thing.
Judd Apatow must have hopped on a bike at some point, probably when he was 40, and chased after somebody.
Maybe Leslie Mann, his actual wife.
But I remember you writing about that, and I even felt that back then. It's like, I understand that criticism, but, like, that definitely isn't as big of a deal to me if it's getting to a different place. I think your argument makes sense there because it's literally the exact same, like, arc and catharsis. Like, the same thing happens. I think the difference with Kanye is, like, the arc and flow we're talking about in his albums, like, are typical of most stories to me, so it isn't that weird. It has to be that Kanye's achieving something different on each album, and I feel like he is, so it's less bothersome to me. But I do agree with you that if we get another album where, like, one half just mirrors the other half, I'm gonna start to be like, eh, okay.
Yeah, right. It's like at that point it starts to feel like, all right, you got your thing. Do something. Like, you've been the innovator. Like, keep innovating.
Like, because I think literally every song mirrors, like, the opposite song, like 2 and 10 and 3 and 9. Like, I actually think that's interesting, and I don't think that's necessarily what happens on Ye. I think it's more of, like, an arc, but not, like, an exact mirroring that I kind of see on this album. So I do find that interesting.
That's going to be fascinating when we go into the song analyses, because that was something that I was initially feeling and thinking on, but I haven't looked any closer at it to see if I, like, firmly agree with or disagree with, if, like, 2 and 10, 3 and 9, like, 4 and 8 have that purposeful, like, similarity and contrast.
I guess I don't even mean, like, that it would be purposeful, but just that, and not that, like, there's specifics in the song, like, ooh, that connects with that, but more that, like, it's such an even journey. Like, the points he gets to at each part of the arc make sense to me. Like, he starts in the lowest place possible, and not that it's a low place, but, like, the lowest place possible in Salah, and gets to the most divine place on Yusuf's Gospel. But yeah, you're right. We'll talk about it though.
Yeah, like thinking about Sela and use this gospel, like Sela's the most combative, right?
Right.
And then use this gospel, he's legitimately reuniting two people that had been yeah. like in combat.
And then Kenny G blesses him with the light.
God, that's going to be so fun to talk
about. We're getting too deep.
Yeah, too deep. Pull it back. And just one more thing, maybe in case somebody's yelling at us or thinking, like wondering about album structure, narrative structure, like stories typically have to start in like a positive place, negative place, or neutral. And then they have to end in a positive, negative, or neutral. It's almost, I'm sure that there's like some random fourth option, but generally speaking, those are your three choices. So a story starting negative and ending positive can happen over and over and over, and there's so many ways to get there that it's okay. Like that in and of itself is going to be a deal breaker. But like the difference between the bike scene is that it's so specifically a bike, like, and so specifically a chase and then hospital and all of that, which is kind of the difference to me.
Mm-hmm.
Though if he just did a thing where every movie went that way, but it had a different aesthetic and tone and style, I think I'd probably get on board with it.
Yeah. Well, we are going to be talking about it very soon, aren't we, Chris?
Yeah. What? After this, we do our initial overview episode before heading into our what should be a short analysis of every hour.
Yeah. We'll try to keep it under 2 hours. So it'll be pretty short.
Could you imagine if we release the every hour episode and people open it and see that it's 2 hours?
I can, and I hope they do.
I don't think it will be. It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be.
We can both agree on that. It shouldn't be.
But, you know, Kanye is our inspiration. He's a rule breaker.
But who knows, you know?
Yeah. So, speaking of, you know, that overview episode, I don't know if we've decided exactly when it's coming out. The only problem is that I leave tomorrow. I'm going to California for the week, and Chris and I aren't going to have time to talk. So either what's going to happen is we're going to record next Monday and release the overview episode on Tuesday, or we're going to take a little more time and release it later that week. Maybe we'll release on Fridays. I don't know, but can we promise that it's coming out next week, you think?
Yeah, I think we can make that solemn vow to our listeners.
Okay, watch for Twitter. We'll probably have updates on there, but yeah, for now, I think that's pretty good overview of your first impression. Anything else you want to get into?
No.
You got a favorite song, like right off the bat?
Yeah, Use This Gospel, I think, is the one that yeah. like is the big standout for me, which might be the cliche, like just Ghost Town on Yay yeah. or but Hands On I really love as mm-hmm. well. And I'm especially excited to talk about the fact that it fucking samples the song from Joker. and then I keep low key forgetting about Follow God being as good as it is.
Yeah.
Too short, but his flow on it and the bounce crazy. Of it, like it feels like that's a song where it's just like, yeah, Ye's still like doing new things.
I think it has the most plays on Spotify, so everyone's like feeling it.
And that line, like, what is it? Supernova for a nightlight. Like, oh my God.
Oh, is that the where he says the Excite Bike?
Yeah, yeah, it's in that section.
Man.
It reminds me in a way of like, I've always wanted Kanye to do a song that's similar to the outro of I'm In It.
That was just
and I that. Feel like Follow God's, yeah, like the closest thing that we'll get.
Yeah. Just as long as the outro, pretty much.
Yep. And then I love the weird production of Closed on Sunday. Like that little yeah. like doo 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 boo 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 boo, boo. I can't do it. But it feels almost like Halloween-y or like a fairy tale in its opening. Like there's something Grimm's fairy tale about it in terms of it being like light but creepy.
Yeah. Well, Chris, if you were a listener of the show, you would go back to Jordan's episode, and when he talked about that song, he was like, I don't know what it is, but when I hear that song, I picture like a bunch of people like creeping through a dark forest, like on their way to do something.
Yes. Yes, exactly that. Like, it feels like you're coming onto like dark fairies in a forest doing some kind of summoning ritual.
Yeah, it's that was my reaction at the time. I was like, well, like, good art evokes like provocative images like that. Like, even if they don't fit, like, when a song is that powerful, you know, it's art is that good. Like, that's what it does.
And you know, it must be doing something cool if Jordan and I agree about what it's doing.
This is unprecedented.
Yeah. I mean, the guy that loves Liftoff
and Batman and me, Superman.
Yeah. Having the same view on what's going on. Crazy.
I tell you what. Well, you know what? Maybe we'll get Jordan on the episode. You guys can just like hang out and like talk about how much you love Fall Close on Sunday.
Sounds wonderful.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode, our last first impression episode. The last time you'll get to hear me by myself next week, my co-host, Chris Lambert. He's going to be back on. But for now, Chris Lambert, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a delight.
Yeah, it was nice to finally have this experience. Thank you so much for talking to me letting me talk.
My pleasure. Well, really, it was your pleasure.
My presence is a present. Kiss my ass.
And we're going to close up the show now. Chris, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. And again, you don't listen to the show, so you don't know I've been doing this. But we were closing out the episode with Cole, our first impression guest, and I said stay wavy, and Cole was like, you should say stay holy, and I was like, okay, that's good, like I'll say stay holy. So I've been closing out each episode saying, like, you know, stay holy, keep it loopy, whatever. How do you feel about this? Does that feel right to you, or should we keep it wavy?
Let's keep it holy for this one.
Or is it keep it wavy and holy?
I'm trying to be like clever and think about some like other word to use, like, oh, keep it wavy or keep it holy. But the only thing that comes to mind is consecrated, which isn't a very, or like exorcism, which aren't.
Man, I really want to change it to keep it consecrated.
That's not a good thing to say to somebody. Like, even if it's, even if it means a fine thing, somebody's going to be like, wait, what? Keep it consecrated, yo. What did you just say to me?
So, how about this? This is my suggestion. One of us says keep it wavy, and the other one says and holy.
I'm just going to be picturing like really religious Swiss cheese.
Hey, if that's the place you need to go to make this work, I'm fine with it.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it.
Well, until next time, stay wavy.
And holy.
Yeah, Swiss cheese, yep.
Yep. So much Swiss cheese.
And I am. And they ask me, I tell them. Raise your glasses to the sky. This is the last call for alcohol for the.